Thank you very much. And Mr. Meister, good afternoon to you. You may approach.
If it pleases the court, counsel, I'm Mike Meister from Scottsbluff, Nebraska. I represent the appellant in this case, Barbara Lewison. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time, please. This case arises out of an automobile accident that occurred on December 21st, 2012 in Kearney, Nebraska. After a two-day jury trial last January, the case was submitted to the jury, and the jury came back with a defense verdict. From that verdict that we have appealed. And the standard of review in reviewing a jury verdict is that where the evidence is conflicting, the appellate court will not ordinarily interfere with the verdict of the jury unless it is clearly wrong. In determining the sufficiency of the evidence to sustain a verdict, the evidence must be considered most favorably to the successful party. Every controverted fact must be resolved in his favor, and he's entitled to the benefit of any inferences reasonably deducible from it. The jury's verdict will not be disturbed unless it's clearly wrong. It is our position that the jury's verdict is clearly wrong. And this is why. This case involved a head-on collision by a defendant that all testimony was ran a red light. The defendant made a judicial admission that she was negligent and that her negligence caused the accident. More importantly, and this is why the jury's verdict was wrong, there was also a judicial admission by the defendant that that accident caused injury to the plaintiff.
Was the admission with respect to any particular injury? What exactly was admitted?
It simply said that defendant, and this is in the pleadings, defendant admits negligence, that her negligence was the proximate cause of some injury to the plaintiff. So the extent of that injury was at issue. But when you look at the evidence that was also presented in the case, and I chose in my brief and also in this argument to focus only on the defense expert. The defense expert said that the plaintiff was injured for at least a period of 4 to 6 weeks with a back and neck sprain. He did not feel that the spinal cord stimulator and all the other things were related to the accident. They were simply an ongoing progression of her pre-existing conditions.
Counsel, does
yes.
The trier of fact have to accept the defense expert's opinion?
No, but in this case, Your Honor, it's an unusual situation because all the experts agreed that she was injured. It was just to what level was she injured. And where the defense takes the position that and puts on evidence and makes a judicial admission that they injured the plaintiff, I think the jury has got to follow the law from the court. And the court says, she's admitted it, they admit that she was injured, and now you have to compensate the plaintiff. And I think if you look at the cases that have been cited, this case falls more in line with Bushy v. French, but if you also look at Ambrosia, and you look at Havlicek versus Tsai, and several other cases that have looked at this issue, including Lohman, which was decided by this court last year. And you put those cases in a bag and you shake it real hard, dump it out, you have Lewison versus Renner.
What were the jury instructions, and what should they be where the defendant admits negligence?
Well, the instruction itself, I think, was fine. I think the problem came in with the additional jury form. And with all deference, Justice Castle, your concurrence in the Lohman case about solving that problem with two jury forms, I don't think it worked. In fact, it actually created a problem. Because the jury form that was signed and by the jury said, we find for the defendant. That's all it said. But they couldn't find for the defendant. And the other problem is...
Counsel, could the jury
yes.
have found that the plaintiff didn't meet her burden of proving the nature and extent of her injury?
I don't see how, given the evidence that existed at the time of the trial. Because, again, all of the medical doctors testified she was injured. So all of the, and the plaintiff testified she was injured. The police officer testified she was complaining of pain at the accident, and she was taken from the scene of the accident in an ambulance. So when you look at all the facts, I think the jury's clearly wrong.
Didn't Part C
believe that's the stock instruction issue.
And consequently, there were no objections to the instruction.
No, Your Honor.
And you haven't assigned error with respect to the instructions.
I have not, because I did not make objections to the instructions.
So, consequently, wasn't the jury told that they could indeed return a verdict for the defendant?
Yes. However,
how does that factor in? We have a concept that I know you know. Sort of
understand
this. Audience, we have a concept called invited error. Wasn't this invited?
I do not believe so. And here's why. The pattern instructions that we used were right out of the JI. And they, you know, if you take a position that the process of making the objection aces out our opportunity to have justice, I think what you're doing is you're putting process ahead of the ultimate goal of what we're trying to accomplish, which is justice.
If the jury had returned a verdict for the plaintiff of $1,
I don't think I'd be here. I'm sorry. I don't believe I'd be here.
And why do you say that?
Well, I think at that, and I realize that the prior cases, that actually happened, and the judge said, no, we're not buying that. Go back and do your job, and he came back with $75. At which point, that trial judge in Bushy declared a mistrial and scheduled a new trial. I think that if the argument was the nature and extent of the injury, that was the argument.
And that's your burden, right?
That is my burden, yes. But where the defense makes a judicial admission, and that I think is the distinction in Lohman, is there's a judicial admission in the pleadings that they injured the plaintiff. Had they not made a judicial, in other words, in Lohman, State Farm says, we agree there was an accident, we agree they were negligent. But we think, and also consider that Lohman was an underinsured case. So that means that the plaintiff already got the primary insurance because they had to exhaust in order to try and access the underinsurance. And so plaintiff, and the other thing with that case that I find extremely interesting is the charge of the trial judge to the jury that seemed to really call the plaintiff's truthfulness and candidness into question. I think it's a generous way to put it. It was almost a scathing, you shouldn't believe this woman, they're just here trying to get their money out of State Farm, when you read the opinion. And the court ruled in that case, and I think narrowly so, because the court specifically said, we declined to overrule Bush and French in that case, even though invited to do so. And what happened was, sorry, Your Honor, I lost the train of thought.
Counsel, in this case, we've got a plaintiff who is alleging three different areas of her body were injured, her neck, her back, and her wrist, correct?
That's correct.
And we've got an admission in the defendant's answer that admitted some injury.
Correct.
How do those relate?
The testimony of Dr. Cotton said that injury was the back. Again, focusing on the defense. He did as to the other, the neck, the spinal cord stimulator, and the wrist injuries. He said those were all pre-existing.
Was the appellant's testimony somewhat contradictory on the extent of her injuries or pre-existing condition? Didn't she say she didn't have a back injury, but the testimony was she had a prior back injury?
In fact, she had prior back fusion surgery, correct. Yes, the plaintiff is a very nice person. She really wanted to talk about that spinal cord stimulator, so that's what we're talking about. So I could understand where the jury could come up to a conclusion that she might only have a back strain for 6 weeks. But to give her absolutely nothing, I think, is the reason, honestly, I'm saying.
Counsel, if the jury had wanted to give her the medical bills during a certain period of time, how could they have done that when there wasn't any evidence of medical bills offered?
That, Your Honor, was on me. I made a tactical decision. There's been a new school of thought out in the plaintiff's bar that putting medical bills into evidence anchors the jury to a number. And when you have a case where that anchored number doesn't really justify what you feel the case is worth, the thought is that you avoid that. If I try this case again, I won't do that, not in this case. I may do it in other cases, but not this case. That's a problem. Any other questions? My time's up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Norton, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, and our audience here today. My name is Nick Norton. I represent Carol Renner, the defendant in the underlying case, and the appellee here. Just want to touch on a few things that came up with Mr. Meister's argument just now. First of all, the medical opinions in this case did not all agree that the plaintiff, Ms. Lewison, was injured in this accident. I think there's a reason that Mr. Meister only talked about the defense expert, Dr. Cotton, and that's because the three doctors who testified by video deposition on behalf of the plaintiff in this case were all kind of equivocal with regard to what was caused by the accident. It could have been caused. It would be consistent with an accident. It may have been related, but there was no doctor called in the plaintiff's case in chief who testified that it's more likely than not that the injuries that the plaintiff was claiming were related to the accident.
But your expert testified did not that there was about 4 or 6 weeks worth of injury.
He did, and I think if you look at the portion of that deposition in context, which is set forth in our brief in this case, I think that was more of an allowance of, well, yeah, at the most, this might have been accident-related. But that came in the defendant's case. There was no medical testimony linking causation of the injuries claimed by the plaintiff to the accident in plaintiff's case in chief. I filed a timely motion for directed verdict that was denied.
Could that evidence be used by the jury to award some money to the plaintiff?
It could have if the jury had decided that was truly accident-related. And I think this gets back to an earlier question that Justice Stacey asked. What this case was about the nature and extent of the damages.
What's the impact of the judicial admission made by your client?
I'm sorry?
What's the impact of the judicial admission made by your client?
Sure. The NJI jury instructions, which have been approved by this court numerous times with regard to negligence, have four elements. I think the first element is that there was negligence. The negligence was the proximate cause of an accident. That the accident was the proximate cause of some injury. And the fourth element is the...
Do you think those instructions are appropriate when there's an admission of negligence?
I do. And that exact instruction wasn't given in this case. There's four elements in the form instruction. The only one that was in dispute was the fourth one, the nature and extent of the damages. In jury instruction number two, the statement of the case here, the jury was instructed that the plaintiff had the burden to prove by the greater weight of the evidence the nature and extent of her damages proximately caused by the defendant's negligence.
In light of the admission, wouldn't the plaintiff have been entitled to at least nominal damages?
I do not believe so, Justice Castle. According to prior opinions of this court, nominal damages aren't allowed in negligence actions. Damages, including the nature and extent of the damages, are part of the prima facie case. So if there's no damages, then there's no liability. You could take as much negligence as you want. Without damages, there's no liability. So Mr. Meister said that if this had been a plaintiff's verdict, the $1 award from the jury wouldn't be here. It's the same effect. This is not like the case in Bushy v. French, where liability was an issue and the evidence of causally related damages was overwhelming.
Negligence was an issue.
Negligence was an issue in Bushy. Here, negligence...
And who won was an issue, wasn't it?
Who won?
Yes.
It was. And the reason that I think that became an issue in Bushy, and I think it's set out in the opinion, is the court couldn't tell what the jury intended. They found negligence and, had occurred and found in favor of the plaintiff, which was disputed. The damages, which were overwhelmingly present and proven to be causally related, they gave zero.
So is there any question in this case who won?
I don't think there's any question in this case who won. The jury was asked one question. They were told that the plaintiff has one burden, and that is to prove the nature and extent of her damages. The jury was instructed that if the plaintiff did not meet that burden, their verdict must be for the defendant. There was no objection to that instruction. And I think it's very clear that that's what the jury decided in this case, is that they did not find the nature and extent of damages had been proven. I also want to touch on the admission was as to some injury. It wasn't as to any particular injury. Almost all of the evidence that the plaintiff presented in this case was in relation to wrist surgeries and a spinal cord stimulator in the back. There was no testimony that those areas were causally related to the accident. What the evidence showed was that the plaintiff had a long history of various ailments, including problems with her back and with her wrists. And in her testimony, she talked about several wrist surgeries that had happened in the past, and her testimony was, I've never had problems with my hands before. She talked about losing a job because she couldn't lift things that she was lifting before the accident, and then admitted that the job she was talking about, she started 2 years after the accident occurred. So there were a lot of credibility issues. Credibility is always an issue of fact for the jury, and I think that the jury's verdict speaks for itself. I don't think there's any confusion about what the jury intended the result to be. Well, Dr. Cotton, after evaluating this case, I don't know that he had a specific injury that he said, well, there was definitely a back sprain that happened here. And that's why I mentioned earlier, I think if you read Dr. Cotton's deposition transcript in context, which is set forth in the brief, I think he was really just allowing that these high-dollar items, the spinal cord stimulator, the wrist surgeries, those are not related to the accident. At most, maybe she had a back sprain. That would be fair. If you have an accident like this and you sprained your back, I think that'd be understandable. I think that's what...
Other evidence presented by the plaintiff as to what treatment she underwent or what pain she had in that sort of pain that was identified.
Very, very little, if any. There were some bits and pieces of testimony that didn't really have dates attached to them. She talked about going to doctor's appointments. But there was nothing specific to that time frame. I think, as Mr. Meister indicated, what the plaintiff wanted to talk about was her back. And she did. She brought in the unit with the spinal cord stimulator and showed that to the jury. And I just don't think that there was ever evidence to show that was related to the accident. So I think that this case should be affirmed for several reasons. First, I think that the jury was correctly instructed as to the law. They did what the jury instructions.
The jury had been instructed that the defendant had admitted negligence and the defendant had admitted some injury. And now your job is to finish the sentence. Would that have been a correct instruction in view of the proceedings in the evidence?
It would have, and it was. The instruction actually read to the jury was, and I quote, from instruction number 2, the statement of the case, section A, the defendant admits that she was negligent in the operating of a motor vehicle and that her negligence was the proximate cause of some injury to the plaintiff. The defendant denies the nature and extent of the plaintiff's injury and damages. So I think the jury had that instruction.
So do you feel that captured that?
I think that was almost verbatim from the amended answer that said we admitted some injury. So I do. I think that was accurate. The instruction hasn't been challenged as being inaccurate.
Counsel, the jurors had a question during deliberation. They sent out a question about, and I'm may not quote this correctly, but something about which bills have already been paid, or something to that effect, correct?
Yes.
What does that question suggest to you?
I don't know. I think that, you know, we take great pains in civil litigation, particularly when in personal injury cases, to keep any reference to insurance coverage away from juries. But I think the jurors know that people have insurance, and they wonder, you know, if someone else had picked up the bills. That's speculation. I wasn't in their heads or the jury room as much as I might have liked to have been. But, you know, I think that the judge's response to them, go look at the evidence, and I'm paraphrasing as well because I don't have that instruction in front of me. May I finish this answer?
You may.
I think his instruction was proper. I think the law was accurate, and I think even if it were inaccurate, the fact that there is no objection, that the case needs to be affirmed. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the second.